This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Ann Tonner was a high-achieving human rights lawyer who found herself facing a battle she couldn't win. Her 13-year-old daughter stopped eating and was diagnosed with anorexia. It's every mother's worst nightmare. Ann Tonner shares her and her daughter's battle with anorexia in her memoir, Cold Vein, which won the Finch Memoir Prize in 2017. Ann Tonner is with me in the studio. Welcome.
Hi, Katrina. It's great to be here.
Now, it must have been, I imagine, a bit traumatic to write this memoir. Why did you put yourself through it? What was your motivation?
Well, I guess a lot of the motivation was to work through the trauma. I mean, obviously, as anyone would know who's been a parent of a child with an eating disorder or has lived through a traumatic period of, you know, with any illness, the trauma and the worry takes a while to go away. So in writing the book, it really helped me to process some of the, you know, quite traumatic memories and to move on from the experience.
Okay. When did you first notice that something was up with your daughter?
When she was in year seven at school, we noticed about halfway through the year that her eating habits had changed quite significantly, so that she was not eating particular foods that she'd eaten before without any problem. She was eating secretively so that she would always want to have her dinner in her room rather than at the table with the rest of the family. And she cut out complete food groups too because she thought there was a perception that they were bad for her, or she had that perception. So I guess that was the thing. And, you know, it was the most obvious thing was when it was her birthday, her 13th birthday, she didn't want to have any of the birthday cake. And that for her, it seemed a really, you know, seemed quite weird. She'd never been someone who'd been concerned about food or concerned about weight. And all of a sudden she was completely obsessed with it.
Yeah. When was the moment that you kind of realised that you needed help or that the penny really dropped as to what was going on?
I think it was, I'd been into the school a couple of times to pick her up and bring her home, and I'd taken her to a doctor who'd weighed her and said, look, she's a little bit underweight, bring her back next week and we'll see if she's put on any weight. But it wasn't until we actually had a day at home where she just wouldn't drink water, and she said to me, look, water will make me fat. So that was really frightening, and it was just that really illogical thinking when you know that you can't beat this with reason or with love or with, you know, patience. It's obviously a serious medical problem.
Do you have any idea what triggered your daughter's anorexia?
Look, in the years since, she's told us that there was an incident in year six, in the final year of primary school, where one of the boys in the class had told her that she looked a bit fat. And she was going through that sort of awkward puppy fat sort of stage that all girls do. And because of that, I mean, she was mortified by that comment, and I think it was made publicly in front of other kids. And as a result of that, she developed this interest in dieting and exercise. And with some kids, that wouldn't trigger anorexia. Mm. But with her, because she's a perfectionist and quite obsessive, it did. You know,
it
she
was just
went
the
on
perfect
a diet.
Storm.
Yeah, exactly. She went on a diet and didn't stop. And there's meant to be with anorexia too, the research is showing a genetic component. And I know that, you know, when I was in my teens, I did go through a stage, not of full-blown anorexia, but obsession with food and dieting. So I'd sort of skirted around the edges of it. And I knew it was a really dark place. And I was fortunate that, you know, that I managed to avoid a full-blown eating disorder. But, you know, obviously, if there is a genetic component, then she may have inherited something from me.
It is interesting how powerful those words are, your fat, because I even remember, you know, in year three, a friend looking at me and going, you're fat. And to this day, I mean, I remember the moment absolutely clearly, and I was only 7 or 8 or 9. Once you realised that your daughter had a serious problem, you know, when she wouldn't drink even water, where did you go for help?
I basically just got on the phone. I mean, I tried to get on the phone on a Saturday afternoon, but of course no one was answering. The following Monday, I started to make phone calls to clinics and hospitals. And no one could see her for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. There was a psychiatric hospital, but it was a hospital for adults. And I was really concerned about how a 13-year-old would cope in that sort of environment. So eventually I got on to a doctor's surgery and just completely lost it on the phone. I was told the doctor could see her in 6 weeks, and I basically said, look, she won't be here in 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I knew that. I knew that to be true because she was just so sick. And then the receptionist came back. She'd spoken to the doctor and she'd organised an appointment for us the very next day at the Children's Hospital. And my daughter was taken there and admitted, diagnosed with anorexia the next day and admitted.
And were they able to give her the treatment that she needed?
They're certainly able to save her life, because that's, you know, that's what it comes to when someone just stops eating and drinking. So she was there for 12 weeks, and she was tube fed. She got nutrition. She put on a bit of weight, and she started to look a lot better. And eventually she was discharged after 12 weeks.
Did she understand what was happening, and did she accept that she needed help?
Really hard to say. Her main concern about going to hospital was that she would put on weight, that she'd be forced to put on weight, forced to eat and put on weight. So really when someone's that sick, they're not thinking very logically. Perhaps at some level she knew she needed help, but it certainly wasn't something that, you know, she verbalised very strongly.
It sounds like a completely, you know, harrowing and exhausting experience. I mean, just as any parent knows, having a child in hospital is terrible, but I can't imagine what that must have been like for 3 months and the impact that that would have had on your other kids at that time. I mean, what was the effect on your family, your marriage, your kids?
Yeah, look, it was a really sad time. She'd never been away from home before. So really, you know, to be in hospital for 3 months and sick with an illness that none of us really understood very well was a really incredibly difficult time and very isolating time as well, because, you know, the kids didn't really feel they could go to school and talk about what was wrong with their sister. And for us it was, you know, it was really difficult to give the other kids the attention that they needed, because we were very busy going back and forth to the hospital and trying to keep on top of things at work as well. So, yeah, a really, really difficult time and a sad time.
Yeah, have you talked to the kids about their memories of it and how they feel about it now?
Yeah, we have. And they've been really supportive of me writing the book, because they felt very lonely at the time, and they didn't think that anyone understood what they were going through. So they said, look, tell the story so other kids will know, you know, they're not alone and that we went through that and we're okay. And yeah.
Yeah. And how did you eventually get a breakthrough?
We tried. Well, we had 2 years where we thought that she'd essentially recovered and she'd...
Was that after the hospitalisation?
After the hospital, she also had a period of still being quite unwell, where she had what we called family-based therapy at home, where we basically took charge of her eating and made sure that she had 3 meals a day, 3 snacks a day, and we had assistance from the hospital through their outpatient program. So that got her to, I think within about a year, she was at a reasonable weight, and everything seemed to be okay. But then 2 years later, when she was just going into year 11, end of year 10, year 11, she relapsed. And the second time she was extremely sick, and the therapy at home, we found it almost impossible to get her to eat anything at that stage. And she also had a problem with very excessive exercise. And this is something that's often associated with severe anorexia, where because the body becomes very cold, this sort of very excessive exercise routine gets going to warm the person up. It's part of this sort of obsessive behaviour that can come about as a result of severe malnutrition.
Mm.
So she'd be in basically just exercising so much and so secretly a lot of the time that it was almost impossible to get her to put on any weight, and her weight got even lower and lower.
So how did you finally get a breakthrough?
Well, the breakthrough came when we heard about this treatment that was developed in Sweden called the Mandometer treatment, and they had a very different approach to eating disorders. So their focus was not on what to eat as a means of treatment, but on how to eat. So they were saying basically that people with anorexia have essentially forgotten how to eat. Their eating behaviour has become really abnormal. So they've forgotten basic things like how to sit at a table and eat, how to eat in a cafe or a restaurant, how to distinguish between, you know, the feelings of hunger and the feelings of being full, and how to eat without restrictive habits. So their focus is on fixing up that behaviour.
So it's not a psychological treatment, then?
They sort of flip it around the other way, which I think is interesting. And so they say it's not disordered thinking that's the problem, but disordered eating. So sure, with an eating disorder like anorexia, you might find that someone's very anxious and very depressed. But their take on it is that those symptoms only develop as a result of the severe malnutrition. So it's not depression or a mental illness that kicks off the eating disorder. It's the mental symptoms appear as a result of the enforced starvation.
So that's a very different approach. And did that work for your daughter?
Yeah, it certainly did. And it made a lot of sense to me because she'd never been a kid that had shown any signs of being, you know, mentally unwell. And really those things, being depressed, and she certainly was very depressed and very anxious, they only seemed to kick in once she'd had that severe weight loss.
Mm. So obviously treating anorexia is one thing. Do you have any thoughts at all on whether it's preventable?
Difficult to, yeah. I don't know whether it's completely preventable. I have to think about that question.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that, you know, every parent out there would want to do everything they can to prevent their child getting anorexia, and I can completely understand that. So I think, I don't know if there's anything that would completely, you know, be a bulletproof guide to prevention, but I think the things to focus on might be building self-esteem around body image. I think you might be more vulnerable if your self-esteem is tied a lot to your body image. So building resilience in young people. And also, you know, cracking down on these kids that bully other kids because of, you know, things to do with their body. Preventing or making kids aware of the impact of statements like that. You know, you say to a girl in year six, you're fat. Well, you know, it's not something that she's just going to sort of shake off and forget about. It can have a really profound effect at a deep level.
As you look back on your experience and reflect over it, you know, through the process of writing the book, with what you know now, is there anything that you would have done differently?
I wouldn't have blamed myself as much. It was such a shock to, you know, suddenly find yourself in the depths of anorexia. And I spent a lot of time thinking, oh, I must have caused this. I'm a terrible mother. And what did I do wrong? And is it because I work full time, you know? But that really was just a waste of time. When you're in that situation, the main thing is to focus on getting effective treatment and to do everything you can, everything within your power to make sure that the treatment you get is actually, you know, the best treatment for your child. Unfortunately, in Australia, treatment options are still quite limited. To get the sort of treatment that we had for our daughter, most people would have to go overseas. That treatment we had is not available in Australia. The thing I really don't understand is that treatments that are actually quite harmful and ineffective do get quite a lot of government funding. If I can just give an example of a psychiatrist we took our daughter to quite early on, asked her what her BMI was, and when she told him, he said, "Oh, you're not that sick. I've got patients with much lower BMIs than that." And I mean,
talk about giving her something to aspire to.
Yeah. It took us, you know, she really went into a very bad place after that. But that is the most stupid thing you can possibly say to someone with an eating disorder, because they will just double their efforts to become even sicker. And that's exactly what happened. But of course, his fee was partially covered by Medicare. And if we'd put her in a hospital, a private hospital that he saw patients in, then it would have been funded by a health fund. I've heard from other parents similar stories.
I can't even imagine why a professional would ask a child that question.
It was really cruel.
Let alone the answer that he gave. Mm,
yeah.
What do you want people to know about this illness?
I want people to know how serious it is. So someone with anorexia is six times more likely, the mortality rate for someone with anorexia is six times higher than it is for the general population. It kills people. It breaks up families. It means that, sufferers take years off school. It's very hard to hold a career down. And it has a huge impact on, family relationships. So it's extremely tough. And it's I don't think it's as well understood as it could be. And it's certainly not as well funded. Treatment programs aren't as well funded as they should be.
How's your daughter now?
She's really good now. So since she had the treatment, the Mandometer treatment, she has never relapsed. She finished school. She's gone on and done a degree at university. She's got a really good job. And she's in a space now where she describes herself as 110% recovered. So she never thinks about eating disorder. Never thinks about calories or compensating for what she eats through exercise. And she's just focusing on the things in her life that she really enjoys, and it's not all about food anymore.
Mm, that's wonderful to hear.
Yeah. So she's in a really good space, and thank goodness we did have access to that treatment. It just concerns me that many people try conventional treatments and they're not successful. But and I'm in touch with a foundation that's being set up at the moment to try and, well, do two things. One, to have a website with accurate information about recovery rates for particular types of treatment. And secondly, to raise money for sufferers of eating disorders to access treatments overseas if successful treatment is not available here in Australia. Mm-hmm. So that's still in very early stages.
Just finally, how does your daughter feel about the book?
She's really happy I've written the book because it's being used, or the feedback I've had is that it's helping a lot of people. Mm. She said that she's glad our story can be used to raise awareness about anorexia and to give people hope that recovery is possible.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's the most powerful thing about your story is that it can give people hope.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming in to share your story, Anne.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, that's Anne Tunner. Her memoir, Cold Vein, tells the story of her daughter's struggle with anorexia.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.